Welcome to episode 49 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September, what's today? I don't know. September the 3rd, 2012, Labor Day. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my Mickey Mouse brother, James Furlough.
Hey, good to be here.
And we're going to get in trouble with copyright at some point in all this. this week, like every
That's
week.
That's what I keep hoping for.
I know, nobody notices, though. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera from the Disneyland headquarters, or very close to it. By corporate opera, I mean the corporation, they're the soap opera of corporations dealing back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Today's going to be kind of a special show because it's Labor Day and it's family time, so we're going to be have a short show, and we're poolside at the Palms Resort, which is pretty awesome. So, James, if you want to throw in your disclosure before we get into the heart of it?
Yeah, you'll get the occasional cannonball. It's just the way it is. We provide extra value here. My disclosure is that I work for Hewlett Packard, and therefore anything we talk about, which won't be this week, about Hewlett Packard has to do with totally distracting. I don't represent them or any of their opinions. That's the important part. You guys all know that.
So, if you've been following any of our Twitters, obviously we've been doing some exciting events here. Oh man, sorry guys. If you've been following our Twitter at all throughout the week, we've been doing some exciting events here in Disneyland. James participated in a half marathon, and I did a 5K, and we're going to talk about that a little bit, but we're also going to talk about what's been going on in tech this week.
Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll quickly cover the tech news, and then, just talk about some of our experiences here.
All right, cool. So, you want to start, James?
Yeah, sure. One of the things that happened this week, and I'm just going to bring this up real quick because we talked about it last week, is they're actually having a space elevator convention.
Nice.
Or I guess by now they did. We talked about it last week. Like, is that the possibility? And, because of space news. But what was cool about it is they interviewed the guy kind of at the beginning, and they were like, so how far are space elevators from becoming a reality? Which is the only question that I really care about. And pretty much first we need a carbon nanotube revolution on Earth. It's like, and once we got that, we'll be able to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's it. And he was saying, like, so far the biggest obstacle is just getting the U.S. and other countries, interested enough to pour the resources into developing it. It's like, we kind of need to do that first.
Yeah, that's definitely something that's I've seen as difficult in the past, this idea of, any big technology like this, you got to convince people why it's economically in their interest to do something that's crazy expensive.
But basically, it's a ways off, is my interpretation of it.
It's 20 to 40 years from now, we'll definitely be seeing it.
I also want to just give a quick shout out to Flipboard on their congratulations. They're 2 years old, and they have 20 million users now. Using their thing, which I use Flipboard all the time on the iPhone, and it's pretty darn awesome. And they were saying that they have about what
is Flipboard again?
Oh, Flipboard. It's an RSS or social media reader app where you use your thumb and so instead of scrolling, you literally flip through stories. So it'll flip up, flip down, flip up, flip down, that kind of thing. If our computer dies, it's because of water damage. it's a cool app. Congratulations to them. I just said my mom's iPad. That's awesome. Special episode.
Special, yeah, special final episode.
This is awesome. So another thing that I wanted to talk about was, because I'm in the personal finance news, and I thought this one was cool.
Speak up.
Oh, all right. So I thought this was, I'm into personal finance a bit, and I thought this was pretty cool. Simple is a new online bank. It's not a bank, it's like a bank facilitator thing where you get like one account, one card, they tie it all together. And one of the things that they do is, or that they've just released, is the ability to see where you're spending, like to see your budget and to create a plan and things like that, which sounds strangely similar to what Mint.com does.
I was going to say, doesn't Mint do that?
Yeah, but they were saying, like, what's cool about it is they have access direct, you know, to your card that you're using. And so because of that, they'll theoretically have more information than even that Mint has. And it'll be, like, live, instant. And you don't have to do the whole refresh thing because they'll have it right there with them. And then it just so happened that the exact same day, someone found code in the Mint.com website. Probably looking at it because of the news from Simple. And turns out that Mint might be coming out with their own card, branded card, that when you use like, it, transactions will go directly through Mint.
A debit?
Or
like
a credit card.
Debit card
type of thing.
Nice.
That should be able to link to Mint.com, obviously. So there's these two titans. They're not titans yet, I guess. Well, Mint is, but there's these two financial companies that are they're starting to do the dance. Kind of exciting.
Yeah.
If you're into that kind of stuff, which I am, because I think only we will win, which is good.
Yeah.
The last thing that I want to talk about was a new game that I two things. First one, go to Wolfram Alpha and type in Facebook report, and then don't do it now.
Okay.
But and then you'll have to connect it to your Facebook account, and what it will do is analyze all of your activity on Facebook, and then give you a cool report.
Nice.
Yeah, they'll tell you, like, you know, what your breakup of friends are, how often you put in status updates, when you do a status update, what words you tend to use most. They'll also show you, like, a tree or cluster graph of all your friends, how they're all related to you and each other. It's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Worth checking out. I mean, it's totally a promo thing to get people to sign up for their service, and it worked for me.
Yeah, as you say, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. There'll be a link to it on our website.
Cool.
And if you click that link, I may or may not take you directly to it, but there'll be an article that'll tell you how to do it. And finally, the last thing is a new iPhone app that I just downloaded, because it's awesome, called Landlord, that is connected to Foursquare. And basically, instead of just becoming a mayor, you log into this place, and you can buy different venues. And then once you buy it, whenever someone else on Foursquare checks in, you get paid rent for it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So can other people buy it from you after you buy it?
You know, I haven't noticed that feature. I think you have to sell it, and then it becomes on the market again. But okay. There would be cool if you could set it up where you could make an offer.
Right.
And, you know, do that. I don't know. It's so far I've only played it. I bought one place. It happens to be the United Terminal at San Francisco Airport. So that one's been kind of fun because that gets a lot of traffic. And,
yeah.
And it wasn't overly expensive, which I was surprised on. I think in a couple days I'll recoup my investment, which is also nice.
That is nice.
I wanted to buy Disneyland, but it's currently out of my price range, $90,000. But it's not as expensive as LAX, which is $2.7 million.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, but they're like, you're going to earn, you know, what is it, like $20,000 a day in check-ins. So,
right.
Yeah, so it's like, they don't even have to be signed up for it. They're just on Foursquare. Whenever they check in, you get credit for it.
Yeah, that's I really like that part of it. You don't even need to, you know, yeah. That
yeah.
It just works, you know, and it just works.
It's yeah, cool. Exactly. So that's what... That's what happened in my world of tech. How about
this
you, man?
This week? All right, man. Well, I've got a little bit more drama. So this week, Facebook revealed that, you know, came to you a couple weeks ago talking about the like fraud on Facebook, people basically paying for likes as a sort of advertising move, and companies that create hundreds, if not thousands, of of bogus profiles and use those to like pages that they get paid for. Well, Facebook on Friday before the long weekend decided to acknowledge the fact that that was a reality and that they need to do something about it. They're not taking any responsibility in it, which a lot of people suspected just because it benefits them a lot to have that happen. But I think at this point they're, you know, whatever they're doing, they're basically trying to clean up the site and get rid of bad profiles. And so pretty cool from that perspective. And yeah, they're really trying to they were trying to let that one just get buried with the weekend. But you know, I wanted to make sure everybody heard it. Yeah, didn't get buried on this show. So they're basically just going to go through and try to clean up those profiles and stop people from doing that. At this point, there's not a lot more to it, but that drama is slowly unfolding.
You know, and I mean, companies like Google are dealing with fraud and search results. Twitter has to deal with that stuff. So, I mean, it's normal. It's good that they admit it and that they're going to put resources behind it, because it just makes the service better for everybody.
Right, and it, you know, makes it worth their time when it comes to investing. If I'm going to get advertising on Facebook, it'll be worth my time to pay for it and know that I'm not getting these stupid links. All right, cool. Next, Microsoft changed their terms of agreement, which really shouldn't be that exciting sounding.
Yeah.
It's not actually that exciting sounding, but one of the things that they did was they moved it to what they call a FAQ style or QA style. But basically what it is, it's the exact same terms of service, but instead of it being just piles and piles and piles of legalese, they tried to clear it up. So it's still very complicated because it's huge.
What is this for?
This is for all of their services.
Oh.
This is their overarching terms of service.
Have they always had that?
Yeah, they always. Oh. Yeah, I didn't even know that they had one. But they went through and
I'm surprised that it's just one. You know, you'd think for each product they have something special.
Well, I'm sure they do, but they have. But it's like, so it goes in and it's like scope of the agreement and acceptance of changes. So section 1.1 is what services are covered by this agreement.
All of them.
And then, it's all in much more plain English. And they're really trying to pioneer and move forward in this idea of a simplified TOS, terms of service. That is, you know, people don't necessarily just click through, you know, something that people can actually read. And I think that's a good improvement, you know, on the internet. Because right now, terms of services are called the biggest lie on the internet.
Yeah, it's a total joke.
But, and the other big one, and this one's exciting to me because I got to see one of Google's automated cars a couple weeks ago, and I like seeing those sorts of things, and they decided to try to make it legal in California instead of just doing it by the shooting from the hip. They actually introduced legislation to the governor and to the legislature in California, hoping to get them to legalize it and regulate it so that there are benchmarks and goals and stuff so that they can actually do it and they can practice with real live cars and stuff.
Nice.
So, yeah, pretty exciting out there. Hopefully
we'll, you'll see more.
Yeah, definitely. In the very near future. So now it's legal. And actually, it was according to – I didn't actually see any article saying it, but I heard someone mention that that the Congress, you know, we passed it on Friday, I guess, which they had just introduced it on like Wednesday. So it's pretty shocking that they'd move that fast in California. But yeah. I suppose it's possible. I'm not gonna write it off on pan. So hopefully, if it hasn't already, probably might have, but soon. So very cool.
That is cool.
So James. How was your run this week? You did a half marathon, right?
Yeah, 13.1 miles, 20,000 kilometers, for those of you on the metric system. It was good. Long, obviously. Sunny, it was, for sure. hot, but I made it, which is cool. It's fascinating looking at all the different technology involved in that process. I mean, there's just me, for example. I've got my smartphone, and like, first thing I do is I turn on my Runkeeper app, and I'm sitting there, you know, tracking my distance, my time. It's tracking elevation. It's got it on a map. It's got my splits. If I wanted to, and I always turn this off because it's annoying, like, on every mile, it can tell me, like, hey, here's your splits. Here's how you're doing. So I don't have to look at my phone constantly.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So, I mean, so there's that app that's, I mean, it's pretty awesome, and it's kind of essential for anyone doing any kind of running, in my opinion. It's so valuable to get that data and that feedback and to know, oh, man, in mile 10, I really slowed down. That's where it was, but I was doing good until then.
Right.
And you can look at a map and go, oh, that's because there was a huge uphill. Duh.
Right.
Yeah, something like that.
Feels bad now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so that one's pretty cool. For me, I like to wear a pedometer just because it's interesting to look at the stats on how many steps that that I've taken.
Yeah.
And then,
which how many steps did you take?
Low tech. So from like waking up in the morning to when I was like done with the marathon, I took about 30,000 steps, which in the math is approximately 2,000 steps per mile. So I walked about 15 miles to do the 13.1, which honestly sounds about right because it took me about a mile to get to where it was. I ran it, and it took me about a mile to get home.
Yeah.
So there it is. But yeah, no, so that was interesting. Some other cool ones, especially like when you're running through the Disney park, it's so awesome. Like, have your phone and like be taking pictures, taking video. Like to talk to family members, like texting back and forth. Hey, running right by the Matterhorn right now, and
right,
you know, be able to do stuff like that.
Because it's such a big race, we couldn't. I did the 5K, which is quite a bit shorter, on the morning before, and but you know, so it was easier if you wanted to come and cheer. It was easier to find people because there wasn't as much space. But like, you know, on a 13.1 mile run, you know, if I wanted to go and cheer for you guys, it would be difficult. You know, it's important to know where you are, so it's nice to have like all that texting capability. But the one thing I did notice was we tried to call you and text you a few times and got bumped to voicemail, like there was no connectivity.
You know, and my guess is that I'm on AT&T.
Yeah,
and there were 17,000 runners all using their version of an app tracker.
Yeah.
And
there's probably like three towers in this area, and they can probably handle 2,000 to 4,000 light traffic. You know, they could probably handle 4,000 people each, and so that's 12,000 people.
Yeah,
just constantly
well,
bumping each other.
Well, yeah, and the big difference is, you know, obviously Disneyland, they had more than 17,000 people in there,
right,
pretty regularly, but they're not all using the GPS, using their phones at the exact same time. You know, for me, 90% of the time, it's just sitting in my pocket until I see, you know, there's a character. Oh, let's get a picture. And even then, okay, I didn't really use much other than for the phone to go, where am I? Oh, okay, here it is.
Right.
But, yeah, with this one, it's just, like, constant tracking and looking where you're at, getting all sorts of information. Yeah. Yeah, it's nuts.
It adds up to a huge quantity of data being thrown around.
Yeah, no, totally. But honestly, for me, it enhances the experience to be able to look back and, like, for now, I can, like I said, I can go back and I can go online or I can look on the phone and, you know, to be able to go like, yeah, this was the race that I did and here are my stats and here's, you know, how well I did. And I don't know, it just enhances it. During the race, it's really nice for sure.
It's very cool. Man.
Yeah, it was cool. I know that they were tracking us because we kept going over different. We had little tracker thingies.
QR codes.
No, RFID.
You guys had RFIDs.
Not QR codes. That wasn't.
That, you had little those little things, right? They're like little squares.
Yes,
on
we
your...
did have that, but that was so whenever like they took a picture of us, they knew who we were. That's my. Well, I'm totally making that up. That's my guess. No, they had little on the ground. There were wires that were covered up by plastic that when you ran over it, it would. That was the indicator. And we had little plastic inserts on our bibs that we tested them when we got our packets and signed up and everything. And they're just like, walk over this, beep beep. They're like, all right, cool, it works. So
crazy. So you were, you know, being tracked.
But yeah, we were, and it'll be interesting, and I'll have to go online and see this because in the Portland Marathon, Jesse had that too. And when you got done, they would tell you, here's where you were at different times. And one of the really cool ones is they were able to go, like, when the first person finished, where was I?
Oh, man, that's a little depressing. I don't want
to know. Jesse was not quite halfway yet when the first person finished on that marathon, and you're just like, oh, that hurts. But it would be interesting to see if they do have something similar. You know, like some sort of website where you can go on and you can look and see your pictures. I mean, they have to. I just haven't got an email or anything yet. Go look it out. Check it out. It's awesome. So they're doing all sorts of tracking. And I mean, and Disney's just like, it's awesome. What can I say?
Yeah.
They had music, like all throughout the park. They had bands, they had cheerleaders, which, for the record, the cheerleaders were the most annoying part, because on our bibs, we had our names written out.
Yeah.
And so they'd be like, good job, James, keep running, James, you're doing awesome, James. I'm like, that's just weird. I don't know you. You don't know me. I'm not going to make eye contact. I'd never make eye contact with you to be like, hey, I'm running here. You know?
It was just, I'm awesome.
They're just calling me out.
Whatever, man. It totally would have worked for me. I'm like, you know what? I am going to start running now. Let's do this. I'm jazzed.
Yep, it was weird. Oh, it's just strange. And, well, the other weird part is, like, because they're cheerleaders, they got, like, their pom-poms are, like, putting their arms in your face. And, you know, they're right next to it. I don't know. It was cool. I don't know. It was weird. The bands were awesome. They had other entertainment. They had, like, a car show that we ran through, and running through the park itself was totally awesome because they'd have different, this is funny actually, they would have different characters just hanging out, you know, like they normally do in the park,
yeah,
taking pictures, but it was the runners who were taking pictures with them, you know, it's not the little kids, these are adults, which, I mean, I realize if you're an adult signing up for the Disneyland half marathon, you like Disney, you know, I mean, I get that,
yeah,
you're not going just because the kids want to, but then it was funny, on one of them, we made the turn in Tomorrowland, and there was this huge line, like 40 people deep. I was like, what the heck? This is like an impacted bathroom. Nope. Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Take a picture of Darth Vader.
And here's the best part. Darth Vader's sitting there, a line, 40 people deep, about 20 feet away, a couple Jedis. Want to know how many people were in line for that?
How many?
Zero.
Oh, that's brutal.
I was like, man, apparently being the good guys is so awesome.
Yeah, man. You know what they say? What do they say about good guys not getting ahead? They say something
finish
about
last.
Yeah, there we go. Finish last. Yeah. Man, that was a stumble to the finish on that.
Yep.
But that's awesome. So speaking of Tomorrowland, we spent a little time in Tomorrowland yesterday. How tomorrow-ish does it feel to you?
So, you know, that's a good question. It doesn't feel, when I think of, like, what is Tomorrowland, I'll be honest, I've been kind of biased by, like, Meet the Robinsons. There's, like, fluffy bubbles everywhere. you know, and then, obviously, Apple's helped to influence what at least today looks like. And, you know, as far as I can tell, this is awesome.
This has gotten so loud, it's not even funny. So when we picked the pool side, there wasn't anybody here. It was completely empty.
Yeah.
And as soon as we started hitting record, kids started to show up, which is awesome. You know,
that was fine.
We're in Disneyland. We're kids. There's just nowhere to do a podcast.
Yeah.
Anyways. Tomorrowland.
You know what? We're going to take a quick time out. And we're going to go see if we can find a quieter spot. And you won't notice a thing. But we will be back as soon as I find where the mouse is. And hit the pause button. We'll be back. No, seriously. Thank you. we're back inside of what now appears to be an echoey hallway. At least there aren't kids.
Kidding my computer with.
Yeah, it was. So, you know, one kid, fine. Three kids, less fine. One of those, like, kids 6, 7, and 8 showed up, you're like, all right, it's time to find a new spot. So now we're sitting in a, I don't know what this is.
Thoroughfare of some sort.
Yeah,
it's a hallway.
It's quieter.
A little bit.
But you'll still hear stuff. So anyways, what were we talking about? Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland.
And, you know, what was my opinion of it? You know, honestly, the way that I would describe it would be Tomorrowland would be a dystopian tomorrow. In the sense that, yes, it does have this tomorrow feel to it. But it's just – it. And part of it might have been because we were walking through at night. But it just doesn't feel as new and clean and polished as a like happy utopian tomorrow. And I don't know. So to me it was like a, you know, PG version of Blade Runner.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, when you think of Tomorrowland, it's supposed to recall these images of a super prosperous and a crazy advanced technological tomorrow. And Tomorrowland seems like, well, it is what they thought tomorrow would look like in the 60s, which we've either surpassed or realized is completely not realistic and just,
right,
you know, foolish or not chic anymore at the very least. You know, we talked about the idea that I think there's a temptation to make it out of glass and plastic and give it some nice flair and, you know, and not flair, but lens flares, you know, you know, call J.J. Abrams on it. And but at the same time, it's like, you know, that's very in style today when you talk about the future. But it would be interesting to really try to think about what would the future look like 100 years from now? What, you know, what is Tomorrowland as, you know, as best as we can guess in 100 years from now?
Yeah, no, totally. Or I think the other route that you go, which they've done successfully with other lands, is you put a more emphasis on movies and characters that they have. Like, there's nothing in there about Wall-E, or nothing big and obvious in there. I mean, they got a Buzz Lightyear thing, I guess, and maybe play that up a little more, but have like a Wall-E type of land, and so. You know, now that's – obviously that movie was considered to be futuristic. I mean, it's kind of weird, like you were talking about. It was supposed to be this happy, bright, beautiful place, and obviously Wall-E is not about that.
Yeah. Actually, Wall-E's pretty dystopic in when it comes to – because it's really and truly you got Earth, which has been abandoned to be a giant garbage pile on one hand, and then you have the, like, morbidly obese, you know, killing themselves with pleasure humans – on this super advanced spacecraft. When I think about it now, like, Wall-E's very dystopic.
That's true. So maybe not Wall-E. But, you know, they should make a spacey type movie, and which is kind of crazy to think, with the intent of saying we want to revamp Tomorrowland. Wow, wouldn't that be a backwards way of thinking about it? I wonder if they do. They say we want to revamp Tomorrowland. But we want to also tie it in with something. So let's focus on a few futuristic topics for movies or TV shows or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, see which one sticks and becomes popular. And whichever one does, we'll head in that direction for Tomorrowland. I could see him do something like that. Therefore, you are sticking with the tomorrow idea, but you're grounding it in something Disney related. And so I think it would have a less chance of becoming dated.
Yeah, because that's the big thing is how do you avoid, you know, what is, I mean, and this kind of ventures into a bigger question of what does 100 years look like from now, you know?
Yeah, which is, I mean, has trouble with that answer,
right?
Question.
Is it all greenery and super nice and you know, the environment is, you know, is on top of it and technology is very non-invasive, or is are there giant walking robots, and which I hope for, and touch screens everywhere, and
yeah,
everything is interactive, and everything is holographic, and, you know, that's something that I think that, you know, is that just, or is that hopelessly today, you know, is that going to be, in 20 years from now, it's either going to be A, totally done, and everybody's satisfied with it, or B, you know,
no.
Yeah. Or B, is it just going, we're going to go in a completely different direction, and in 2030, we're going to look back, look what they thought that was going to be happening in 2012. Jeez, man, that's not very tomorrow-ish, you know? Because I think that's what happened to Tomorrowland in general, is it's just not very tomorrow-ish, because they didn't think far enough, or they didn't get it right, you know?
Well, it's not, I think they did think far enough. It was just, you know, it's exceedingly difficult to rehab it,
right?
You know, so they just didn't redo it.
Yeah,
and which is the funny thing, you know, the nature of technology and this concept of Tomorrowland. It's like, honestly, you need to redo the park every 2-3 years,
right? Because it just moves so fast.
Yeah, that's just the way it is. But I mean, that's also unrealistic to ask them to do that.
Right. You could build a space elevator in the middle of it. That would be really cool.
Dude,
do like a drop zone type space elevator.
Whoa. That would be actually really cool.
That would be fun.
I mean, they already got one.
Yeah.
Hollywood Tower. But why not?
Right.
I like it. Make it more like a rocket ship, like Superman style, California, Six Flags, Magic Mountain. They have that. I mean, I'm sure they have it other places where the roller coaster starts out horizontally, makes a quick 90-degree turn to go straight up, and then you come back down. You're flying like Superman is the idea. You could do that like a rocket ship.
Yeah.
I don't know. Space is still something that is unique, and we haven't reached there. And I think that's a safe bet.
I think Space Mountain, you know, works as a, you know, I don't, you
wouldn't. Which we went on that last night, and it is still awesome, just in case you were wondering.
Yeah.
Nighttime. I think nighttime is better than daytime because it's actually dark. I mean, I know it's inside, but I feel like it's actually darker.
I haven't been on enough to really know this.
I just remember there was one time where I could faintly make out, like, the tracks and stuff.
Oh.
And I couldn't this time.
Yeah.
Until we were there.
Right.
You know, but, yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, and it still works for future. Don't change that ride, Disney.
Yeah. Keep it. But I could see, you know, yeah, just it's the overall design of it. Get rid of the neon. Neon's out, man. We go with bright whites now.
Yeah, there was a lot of neon. I did notice that, which was cool in Cars Land because that's what it was about, and they had a ton of neon.
Well, ironically, that's because if Tomorrowland was made in the 50s and Cars Land, the car, you know, from the movie Cars, that whole area was from like the 70s. So that was the Tomorrowland chic, you know? they had it right. But we just leapfrogged beyond that, you know, in Tomorrowland.
Yeah, that's got to be. I mean, and here's the other problem that they're going to run into, which is totally ironic of Tomorrowland, is if/when we ever have kids, I want my kids to see it.
Yeah.
You know, and so they need to figure out a way to change it and update it, but yet not lose the historical,
right,
you know, nature of it.
Yeah.
That's so hard to do. And I think right now, at least what they've opted to say is, well, we're just going to make sure it stays clean.
Yeah.
And we're just going to leave it the way it is. And
they're going to preserve it as a historical, this is what the 50s thought the 2000s would look like. You know, maybe cartoonified a little bit, but
yeah, which is fine. Which, yeah, I don't know. It's tomorrow-ish.
Yeah.
A dystopian Tomorrowland. That's where I put it. Which, in some ways, is a today land.
Yeah, that would be the most boring land you could possibly have.
You know, though, I mean, really, the entire park is stuck in the 1950s. If you think about, like, downtown Disney,
yeah,
that's old school downtown. And relative to that, it's still Tomorrowland.
Right.
It's where it gets weird is when you add stuff like Cars and, you know, that's...
Which is why they think they started the California Adventure, was this idea of they wanted to do newer stuff, and yet the, you know, the parks act as a sort of preserve for, you know, for the 1950s Disneyland. I don't know. I feel like people would be... I feel like there was one part of the park you could touch, it'd be Tomorrowland. Because the people who really, really love Tomorrowland are people who love... And maybe this is biased because it's me. But I feel like I really liked Tomorrowland as a kid because it was all futuristic. And now as an adult, I'm like, well, it's not futuristic anymore. So, I, you know, whereas, like, I think, you know, with... You know, obviously you could never change Downtown Disney because the people who love Downtown Disney... love the fact that it's, you know, it's old fashioned, it's 1950s.
Anytime USA. Anytime USA.
Yeah. You know, so it's, yeah, it's an interesting dilemma that they face. But I feel like if they could do it in any part of the park, Tomorrowland's where they could do it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Zoe, we watched the fireworks show last night. What were your thoughts on that?
Fireworks, the first time I'd seen it. When I'm old enough to remember it, I should say from inside the park, because I last time we were down here earlier this year, we did a show, and it sounded like a war zone was going off in the middle of the show because I was right underneath the backside of the fireworks. But one of the things that I thought was really cool and was and they play music during when you're downtown Disney or Main Street Disney, I should say. You know, they play music and they turn off lights and there's a whole, it's all orchestrated together, but they really do a very good job of making the bangs, the pops of the fireworks when they explode, go off with the music, either like at a cymbal crash or, you know, during a downbeat during the quiet part so that they, you know, so that it's pounding you right as, you know, in cadence with the music. Which is actually a pretty impressive feat because it's like, you know, number one, sound doesn't, you know, travel at the speed of light. So you have to actually set them off to go off considerably before the you want the impact to hit you. And that obviously has to do with when the lights go off because the light's going to get you before. So you've got to time it with the music such that the light is in cadence with a beat of music and the bang is in cadence with whatever is going on in the music, and there's, you know, a time delay between the two, but then you also have to, it's crazy because it's like, you know, fuse burns on those things aren't entirely predictable. You know, they you try to make they're one-offs. You can't, like, you can't make a firework and test it a few times, make sure this one
right.
Shell is going to get it right. No, you just get one shot. So you have to have these incredibly precise practices that allow you to get these timing things so that they're all within, you know, fractions of a second. Because if it gets too far off, it, you know, it's really weird when the beats are, you know, it's frustrating. And, you know, the goal is to actually get people to not even notice it, I think. You know, it's to get it to be where you're listening to the music and it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't draw your attention away from the music. It enhances it, you know, and or vice
right.
versa. You don't want the music to distract from the fireworks. You want them just to blend seamlessly.
Totally.
And they have to do it every time, every night, time and time again. You know, the easiest part about the whole process is building the computer system that when you hit the button, it'll fire it off at the right time. Because that's, you know, you can control that within fraction, you know, milliseconds because
right.
they're all, you know, little electronic relays. Whereas the actual fireworks are crazy. they have to shoot up a certain distance. They have to be a certain distance away. And they have to explode at the right time.
Yeah,
you know, it's nuts, but very cool. I was very impressed. There was a lot of obviously Disney is the king of details, and they had all the details just totally tacked away. And,
well, you know, and they do get to practice once a day.
That's a good point.
You know, that's I'm gonna say that that's their practice session. You know, they just watch it, tweak it, and change it. And,
yeah. They want to make sure the big ones for Christmas and Thanksgiving and Halloween, those ones are all super fantastic. So the day-to-day is they just kind of make it better. Well,
you know, I wonder, and so I just don't know the answer to this, but, like, if we actually saw preparation for their part of the – I don't want to say it, like, part of their preparation for, say, their Halloween show. There was one segment in there that was actually designed for Halloween.
Yeah.
And maybe they literally embedded it with, you know, another, the regular one going on, just to make sure they get the timing and the rockets right. We just didn't notice, didn't care.
Yeah, you'd actually have to see them all in order to
you know,
see
it's
the
like,
change.
It's like when you take the SATs, some of those questions in there don't actually count. They are preparation to or consideration questions for a future test.
Right.
And so, you know, they're looking at the numbers to make sure that they're all within what they're expecting. And you just don't know which one it is, don't care. And if they literally have like a section where they go, yeah, you can embed some, you know, you can embed a, I don't know, a 10-second piece in here, and they're going to take 2 months and get the entire thing.
Yeah, do an entire show over a 2-month period. That would
make sense. I don't know. I mean, that's obviously a whole lot of work. But, and then maybe the, you know, a week before they do a dry rehearsal, you know, late at night. But I don't know if anyone ever reports like random fireworks.
You can't quite do a dry rehearsal though, because you're in the middle of a major metropolitan area. Everybody would notice.
You know, I wonder if Disney like secretly owns land in like the middle of New Mexico and they're like shooting off fireworks.
They gotta have. They gotta be. But yeah, they gotta.
Maybe
they just
Disney World. You know,
well, yeah. But at the same time, it's like, you know, exactly what you said. You know, it's like a performance for a theater.
Any differences? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Well, but they're like it's a theater performance as much as anything. Totally. You know, they're performers and they do their performance every night, and every night things go a little hinky and every night things go a little great. Some nights you're just like, that was the best performance I've ever seen. And some nights you're like, eh, it could have been better.
Dude, you missed the gong like 3 times.
Right. Yeah.
Come on, dude, Aladdin.
It was off every time. You know, and I got to imagine that for them, it's just one of those things where you just, every night you just try to make it a little bit better. You try to tighten it up a little bit, and they've, you know, they've got a probably entire team of Imagineers that, you know, spend an awful lot of time on fireworks and explosives and, you know, and it's got to be a nightmare every time they change vendors from one, you know, from one fireworks company to another. They might own their own fireworks.
I was gonna say, they probably don't at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if you're a vendor for Disneyland, what, you're going to run out of work, go out of business? I mean.
Right. You basically become.
A, they're not going to hire someone who's an idiot.
Well, actually, you know what? I do know a little bit about this. I mean, I didn't have to sign a non-disclosure act, so I don't mind talking about it. But I worked for a company who manufactured the. So on Pirates of the Caribbean, they got those boats.
Yeah.
My company made those boats.
Company you worked for.
Company I worked for, yeah. I started working there after, and nobody at the company ever. They were always very clean about it, and they're very, because they'd all sign non-disclosure acts. So they're always like, yes. They'd tell me all about these boats they made for this theme park down in L.A.
Oh, man. Yes.
And I was like, well, so, you know, what are they? And they're like, it was a Caribbean-themed ride that we were making them from. It's so funny.
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah. And but they said that originally the Imagineers came in and they said, look, we would like to build these boats at your facility. You have the facilities that we need. And we said, yeah, sure, okay. They said, yeah, sure, okay. And the Imagineers came in, used all the equipment, paid tons of money, used all the equipment, and the first few boats that they popped out were just totally mangled and malformed and just like destroyed. And finally one of the CEOs said, look, guys, we know how to make your boats. And the Imagineers like, no, you don't. And they're like, yes, we do. But I guess it was a big thing because, you know, Disney's so protective of all their technology. The only thing that they were allowing us to do was own the facility. It was the Imagineers that were going to do the work.
That's crazy.
And it took a long time. And basically, finally, what happened was the guys at Polyprocess said, let us make one boat for you. Just one. And if it doesn't work on the first try, you guys can do whatever you're going to do. You guys can go with somebody else. But if it works, we'll make your boats for you.
Yeah.
And Disney went, fine, we'll let you make one boat, and hit it on the first boat. You know, because they knew what they were doing. You know, they knew
the
they could. Yeah. And so it, you know, if, and I say all this to say, if there are vendors that, you know, do the fireworks, it's Imagineers that are actually building the fireworks. They're just using somebody else's facility.
Okay. You know, paying rent.
Right. Exactly.
Huh.
But.
Interesting.
Yeah,
cool.
Definitely.
So, did you have a good visit? Were you, you know, was it fun?
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I got one more stop I got to make. There's a t-shirt. It wouldn't be mine, but
it's important. I rode all the rides I wanted to, which is good. Got to try. I had never been in California's Adventureland before, so that was fun to try everything I wanted to try on there, including the ice cream during the hot day. That was delicious. Now I'm headed back home. Regular life starts back up. Jesse's going back to work teaching, and I'm also, I guess, going back to work, but I don't really stop. And that's it.
Cool, cool.
All right. Well, everybody, we really do appreciate you putting up with the splashes and the noise and people walking back and forth and all that fun stuff. We're making it work for you. So we just appreciate your patience with that. It should be normal next week. I don't
see anything reason why not.
Yeah. So we'll do that. All right. So again, everybody, thank you for listening. My name is James Furlow. My magical brother is Matthew Furlow. And we will talk next time. Because of water damage. So anyways, it's a cool app. Congratulations to them. I just said my mom's iPad. That's awesome. special episode.
Special final episode.